Are you confused about real food and what's healthy and good for the planet? Do you need the facts about local, organic, and sustainable food? Well, get ready to change the way you eat. Get ready for The Appropriate Omnivore with Aaron Zober.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. I'm your host, Aaron Zober, covering lifestyles in the world of real food. On October 17th, the Weston A. Price Foundation will be holding its annual Wise Traditions Conference, this year in Salt Lake City, Utah. As has been the tradition on The Appropriate Omnivore, I'll be interviewing several of the upcoming speakers. My guest today is Vanessa Hargrove. Vanessa is a microbiome coach and author of the book Homestead to Homestead. She will be giving two presentations at the Wise Traditions Conference. Her first is Targeted Microbial Therapy, 8 Powerful Foods That Heal You from the Inside Out. And her second is Unlocking the Secrets of Sourdough, Health Benefits, Gut Microbes, and Ancient Grains. Vanessa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm glad to have you on, and I'm glad that you're able to do this, as I imagine there's a lot of preparation for giving not one, but two presentations at this conference, which is amazing.
I gave these presentations at my local Denver chapter already, so they've been ready for about a year.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, so you had some prep.
No big deal. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, I know this is your first Wise Traditions conference. How are you feeling about attending this?
Oh, I'm pumped. I'm really excited. This isn't something that I would have ever done for myself. I'm not a person who's like, I'm going to go to a conference. I'd save that money for other things. So to be invited to go and speak and have that paid for so I can actually attend the conference as well as speak at the conference and enjoy all the amazing food. And I just can't wait to see what all is involved. And it's really a dream come true for me because I never would have done it otherwise. So I'm so thankful. Sally Fallon invited me and offered for me to teach two classes, which was just so unexpected. And I wrote the sourdough class specifically because she asked me to. I'm teaching that on her request. So it should be really, really fun.
That's wonderful. Yes, I've been to 7. My first one was 13 years ago, and I haven't been to every one, but always a great time. Everything, yeah. The people, the food, and let's not forget the presentations, as that's what this speaker series on the podcast is about.
For sure. It seems amazing. It looks like so much fun. You can't go to all of them. I don't even know how to pick. All I know is what I'm doing those 2 days at 4 p.m. I'm speaking at 4 p.m. on Friday and Saturday night. So put that on your schedule so you can come and watch my presentation for sure. But there's going to be a lot of amazing people there. There's a veterinarian going from our neck of the woods. She's a Denver lady too. She's going to be giving a really interesting talk too.
Yes, you have a great chapter, and I'm glad that this is in your region. It's the closest it's been to California for a while since that Anaheim conference in 2015. And in fact, at that Anaheim conference, during the Saturday night banquet, I had the pleasure of sitting at a table with 3 members from your chapter and all wonderful people.
They are sweet ladies. They're so sweet. He showed me a picture of them and I was like, oh yeah, I've been in and out of this chapter in Denver over the last 25 years. We started going when I was 18. My mom got into Weston A. Price in the early 2000s when it first came out and started attending the Denver chapter. And then I moved out and did adulting things and came back when I was trying to get pregnant with my son and having fertility issues. So we really dug deep into nutrition and was able to help with the PCOS that I had given myself through my bad young adulting diet and was able to conceive my son. And we've been in the Weston Price way ever since. I did take a little break briefly when I was pregnant with my daughter. My body wanted all the bad carbs and I indulged. And so I went off the rails while she was a baby. And about 6 years ago, I really started digging deep into health and nutrition again and epigenetics and Weston A. Price and all of those things. And yeah, now we're far crunchier than we've ever been. We are definitely off of the fast food. We are off of all seed oils. We make everything from scratch. scratch. We are a handmade household. So I buy ingredients only and make absolutely everything from toothpaste to soap to hair cleaning products, all of my laundry detergent, all of the things. I make everything from scratch because there was nothing after learning about toxins and phthalates and perfumes and fragrance and all of these things. There was nothing that qualified on the market that was willing to pay the $80 a bottle for whatever people are making up when I could just make it myself.
And I can certainly understand that you took some time off. I had that too. There was a time where people may have noticed that I wasn't blogging or podcasting enough and just going through some things, but ultimately the journey led me back to Weston A. Price.
Yep. They're core teachings in my practice as a microbiome coach. These are the core things that I teach, the nutrient density, the preparing the foods properly. All of those are so essential for your health and well-being, especially if you're trying to heal from any sort of chronic illness. Those are things that we work on a lot in my coaching because people are so sick of doctors not being able to tell them what's going on and not being able to help them and just throwing pills at them and never figuring out what's actually happening. It's the craziest thing. All these people come to me in this state where they are just desperate and they can't take it anymore and the doctors aren't telling them anything. I'm not a doctor. I'm a mom and I'm teaching people how to make food. And that food, if you eat it in the right way, can heal your body. It's dang near magic. It has healed some people of crazy things. I'm not prescribing anything. All I'm doing is teaching them how to nourish their bodies.
Yes. And in a little bit, I'd like to get into your coaching. But before, tell us a little more about how you came back to the Weston A. Price and the nutrient dense diet.
I started on Instagram when my daughter was 2. I started really looking around on Instagram and I started figuring out that I could follow health and wellness people on Instagram. And so through finding little seeds of information, kernels on Instagram, I would see a post about the MTHFR and I would go down a deep dive. And next thing you know, I've listened to 6 books about epigenetics and MTHFR and nutrition and all of these things. So basically, I go down these rabbit holes and all of these rabbit holes led me back to the Weston A. Price Foundation and the nutrient density and the microbiome. And it was all tied together to the gut and nutrition. And no matter what rabbit hole I went down, I always ended up back at the Weston A. Price.
Instagram seems to be the place now to learn about this. Back when I was doing it and I first learned about Weston Price around 2011, back then it was a blogging thing. And that was a big thing for me too, because I first learned about Weston Price through this blog called Let Them Eat Meat.
Nice.
Yes. And then also it helped Weston A. Price. They do a lot of exhibiting at different conferences. That was a big help for me too, was back when they had this Green Festival, which sadly is no more, going to their booth and talking to people. That was a big help too. And I think that's a great thing. Chapters are obviously, you've had that with your mom being a member and going to chapter meetings with your mom.
Yeah, we were really big on taking people with us anytime we had interest, basically. Anyone who showed interest in nutrition at all, I'm like, here, read this book. And I hand them Sally Fallon's Nourishing Traditions and I give them dates for classes and meetups because I know that when you're in this alternative nutrition space, which we are technically still alternative, despite being traditional, we are the alternative.
Yes, so it's interesting words of what they mean. Traditionally, alternative, conventional. They could be interpreted a lot of ways.
It's like, this is how we should be eating for nutrient density. But anyway, being in an alternative lifestyle, learning how to eat in nutrient dense ways, there are not a lot of people that are ready to support you in that and understand what that means and ready to teach you things and learn things with you. And that is the most amazing thing about these chapters and these meetups is everybody is on the same wavelength. Everyone's trying to heal. Everyone wants the best for their family. Everyone wants the best for themselves. They are on a journey. If you are at a Weston A. Price meeting, a conference, you are on a journey. You are not standing there as an NPC, not doing anything, eating your taquitos. You are serious about your health.
Yes, and I like how you bring up the concept of bringing friends to the Weston Price chapter meetings. And as I co-lead the Pasadena chapter, our great founder, Karen Volkning-Behegan, had this idea when she started it, and we did it throughout of some months. We would have the theme of the meeting would simply be bring a friend and learn about Weston A. Price Foundation.
Totally. That's a great idea for sure. The potlucks are so wonderful, and just knowing that everything there is something nourishing and safe and people have put thought into it and are really mindful, it just makes it such a delightful experience. Do you guys do a potluck at yours?
We do, yes. And because some people may not know, the requirement for being a Weston Price chapter is you simply have to provide a resource list. But of course, many chapters go further and do things. Some even as frequent as once a month, they'll have these potluck meetings. And I'm glad that you're in an area that also has them. Are they monthly?
We do ours every other month in Denver. Yeah. There is a monthly one in the next town over that I just got on their mailing list. So I'm hoping to maybe attend those too.
Yeah, it's hard doing monthly ones. And actually, we're on a little hiatus right now for a number of reasons, but we are planning on getting back. But we may start with quarterly meetings and then work our way towards doing the monthly ones again, because it's a lot of work. I can vouch for that.
Yeah, it's tough finding good people that want to come talk and instruct the class, for sure.
Absolutely. And so I think that makes a nice segue as you're talking about teaching classes to what you do as the microbiome coach. Explain to the listeners exactly what that means to be a microbiome coach.
So what I do is I take someone's health history, their lifestyle, what kind of symptoms they have, and we equate that to what's going on inside their body. So we figure out what triggers they may have in their diet or their lifestyle that may be causing leaky gut or other inflammation in the body. And we try to remove those triggers from their life. And during that time, I do a 12-week program. And so each week we introduce a new fermented food to their diet to rebuild their system from the bottom up. So we remove the triggers, and then I teach them how to make all the foods and introduce the foods. And then we troubleshoot and work on their nutrition and their circadian rhythm and their nervous system regulation. It's a very cohesive coaching situation where we're looking at your health from all angles and doing everything we can, nutrition and lifestyle wise, to really improve people's health.
And when your journey did you start coaching other people?
So after I fixed myself, and I have three friends that I dragged with me when I started learning about all of these things, they were my first coaching clients where I would troubleshoot everything and I learned working with them. And then I had a lady who reached out to me on Instagram, and her name's Misha. And she was really sick, really, really sick. She was bedridden. She had Crohn's disease, IBS, diverticulitis, colitis, poop, puke, paralysis of her guts. She was on 16 different prescriptions all at once. She couldn't eat meat. She couldn't eat any hard protein. Anyway, she reached out to me. She told me her story, and I was like, are you ready to get better? And she was like, yeah, I'll do whatever you say. And so she was my first real coaching client. And so with her, I got her on the phone. I helped her order all of the cultures she needed. We got all of her grocery lists put together. All of her things arrived. We got on the phone again. She lives in Michigan. I live in Colorado. I walked her through making the yogurts. I walked her through making the kefir. I walked her through making the fermented veggies. I took her through every single step of the project. We got her on specific supplements that she needed for her digestion. She started being able to get out of bed. And within a month, she was up and running with her grandkids again. And she was dropping medications like flies. They were gone, dropping them down. She went from 100 milligram pain patches of fentanyl down to 25 in a matter of 3 months.
Wow.
She's off of the Humira. Her Crohn's disease is in remission. And this was just with food. So when that happened, I was like, wow, okay. So this actually works really, really good. I think I need to tell people about it. So yeah, Cheryl was like, can you put together a talk? Let's change the topic a week before the meeting. And I was like, okay, I'll write up this story because I think it's important and I want to teach you guys about it. And she's like, all right, whatever you want to do. So I went and did the talk for my local chapter and I recorded it and I did a live stream on my Instagram because I think it's important. and I posted it to YouTube, and Cheryl sent it to Sally Fallon. Sally loved it, so she invited me to come and teach at the conference.
That's great. And what I really find fascinating about the story is that, as you explained, you're in Colorado, you're working with someone in Michigan. And is that a major part of your practice, is being able to work with someone anywhere in the country or perhaps even anywhere in the world?
I am working with people all over the world. We ended up offering a group coaching program in the spring to the summer. So we had a gal from Canada, we had a gal in Australia. And so in my group coaching program, it's less for the really sick people. It's for the people who are just trying to get a little better, learn how to do all the things. It's the same exact program. It's just a little less hands-on. We're not looking at all their supplements. I'm not digging through their drawers like I have to with the really sick people. So they're in the group coaching program. And so we go through my same program. We make everything. We have a class once a week where we make kefir 1 week, kombucha the next week. And so that's a more accessible way to do it. My really intense one-on-one clients, it's a more intense program. We're in a communication a heck of a lot. But then we also have a membership. So that's stair steps. So the membership is $50 a month. And in that membership, we do 2 live classes every month. And so this last month, we infused oils for skincare. And we just did culinary infused oils like chili oil, rosemary oil, those type of things. We're going to make soaps. We're going to make skincare products. We're going to make kimchi and apple cider vinegar next month. And so it's a community page where everyone who is part of the membership, it's like a private Facebook. So they can be in there and they can ask questions, they can post their wins. And then we all get together to make something live a couple times a month. So that's also a really fun thing we do.
Yes. And I know that you call the course Targeted Microbial Therapy. That's also in the name of one of the talks you're given. So explain to the listeners exactly what that means.
That's just the name I came up with for my fermented foods protocol. So in the fermented foods protocol, we are using specific microbes in certain foods to get certain outcomes. So for example, we use L-reuteri yogurt. It's a specific strain of yogurt that increases your body's oxytocin production. It increases your testosterone. It increases your collagen production and your skin thickness, can increase the growth of your nails and your muscles, can increase sex drive in men and women. It's a very, very, very powerful microbe that if you've ever had antibiotics in your life, you do not have anymore. So 90% of the population in this world does not have L-reuteri anymore. So imagine how much better someone would feel if they reintroduce this microbe to their system that they've most likely been missing since they were a child.
Yes, that's an important concept, especially as you explained that this applies to about 90% of the world. So I think that that's a very amazing thing that you're doing.
And we're not just thinking about antibiotics in the form of taking a pill antibiotic. We're also considering antibiotics in the form of glyphosate sprayed on over our food.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So in my program, we are wanting to get off of all conventional grains. So we're not eating any packaged bread products, any cookies, cakes. If you didn't make it, you shouldn't be eating it. And yeah, so people think they're not on antibiotics and they're not messing up their immune system. But then if they go and eat a burger at any fast food restaurant, any restaurant in the country, unless it specifically says organic, you just carpet bombed your microbiome. You have to be very cautious of what you put in, and you want to be on top of building up your microbiome every day, all the time, because there's so many things attacking it constantly that you really have to stay on top of it. So I'm fermenting and eating fermented foods every single day.
Me too. And I like how you touch upon the dangers of conventional wheat and grain products out there in the market. Obviously, the glyphosate is a big problem, but I imagine that there's other issues that you see too with them.
Yeah. And on top of the glyphosate, they're also enriched. So you're getting the folic acid, you're getting bad forms of B vitamins that a lot of our population cannot clear from your body. So it causes inflammation, it causes irritation, it causes elevated hyperness. It's not pleasant. So people who have any form of anxiety should not be eating any conventional grains. They should not be drinking any energy drinks. They shouldn't be getting any B vitamins other than those from fermented foods and meats and those types of things. No vitamins outside of foods.
Yes, because even organic flour can at times have these enriched vitamins added to them, the synthetic vitamins.
You have to check. It's best to grind it yourself.
Absolutely. And do you also recommend people using a certain type of grain, like a certain heritage?
It's up to you. How much you can invest is how much you can invest. It's really very personal. At bare minimum, you want to get organic grain that just says wheat berries as the ingredients. It doesn't say any sort of enrichment. Just make sure you read the labels on everything. Nothing is safe. Just because it's organic does not mean it's not full of seed oils. You have to read every single package.
Yes.
Cannot emphasize it enough.
Oh, me either. And that's the thing also, even if you see a certified organic wheat product in your natural grocery store, you got to look at the ingredients. So many of them have seed oils in them, whether it's organic hamburger buns or organic waffles or whatever.
You have to check them all. So be prepared to be really angry. I apologize in advance, but you're probably going to be really mad. It's not fun.
Yeah, I would also say a problem is added gluten to these products. That's another thing. And as Sally Fallon has proposed, maybe that's the reason we have so much of a problem with gluten now.
Part of it, I definitely think it's the glyphosate.
Yeah. And she said that in a talk about the added gluten, but then when I had her on the podcast a couple months ago, she brought up the glyphosate too. So yeah, she would agree with you on that. Definitely.
The glyphosate's the biggest issue for sure.
It is the biggest issue. I would agree. And so you have these great classes where you teach people how to make foods and cleaning products and everything. And I know that before the class, you had been writing the book Homestead to Homestead. So tell us more about how that came about.
Yeah, I started my Instagram page and started sharing the things that I make. And I make products for my family. I make everything we use in our house. And naturally, my friends and family started demanding that I make things for them. And I got to the point where I could not produce as much as they wanted. And so I decided to start writing down all of the recipes that were requested of me in a Canva file, basically, and it turned into a book. So yeah, every time a friend or family member wanted a recipe, I put it in there and then I would send it to them. And I just saved them up until I had an adequate amount to just make it into a book.
Nice. So you had published that and given that to friends. And you have a lot of great recipes and instructions for how to make things in it. And I like to focus, since this is the appropriate omnivore and we focus mainly on food, on the food section, which I know is the section at the end, but we'll start with that one. And I figure let's also start with the sourdough one, since you giving a presentation on the secrets of sourdough at the conference. So tell us about some of the different sourdough recipes you have in there.
Oh, they're so simple. A lot of them are just really to use up excess sourdough. So when you're
Yes, that came across to me too as I was reading it.
Yeah. So if you need to use up some sourdough, you take it and you can make some pancakes or make some waffles, put them in muffins, put the sourdough starter in cookies. So there's a lot of those type of recipes in there just to have ways to use up excess starter. There's cracker recipe in there. And then we have really simple, basic methods for making sourdough. It's not a hard and fast rule for the bread. It's a little more flexible. So depending on how much liquid you have in your sourdough starter, you may need more or less liquid in your dough. So it's really teaching you to try to read your dough rather than putting in a static amount of flour and water. It's much more loosey-goosey than a regular recipe. This is the sourdough recipe for the lazy baker who likes to wing it, okay? So it's just a very basic ratio. And from there, you can take that and make pizza dough. You can make focaccia. You can make bagels if you add a little more flour. You can make pretzels. So it's so flexible. You don't need 100 recipes. If you want other recipes besides that, you already know how to make a basic dough and you can mix in whatever flavors you want into that to your heart's content. You can make it as fancy or as lazy as you want. I do mine in a sandwich tin. It takes very little shaping. It's super simple. that way. It's very manageable. It's not a hard thing to make. You just have to have the starter and take a little bit of time to learn how to dough.
I've seen sourdough crackers becoming a popular thing to use with the sourdough discard. A lot of people are doing that.
They're yummy. They're really yummy. And you can do sweet crackers too. You can do sourdough graham cracker, or you can do fish cracker. I ordered little cookie cutters that look like the goldfish crackers, so I can make little fish for the kids. You can add cheddar. You can add all sorts of seasonings. It's very customizable to your taste. You can use butter. You could use olive oil. There's so many different styles. So it's just a super basic recipe in there, and you can switch out whole wheat for not whole wheat, whatever you have on hand. It's not strict at all.
A graham cracker sounds great. Now, the one thing about whenever I hear someone mention graham cracker, because I don't know if you know the origin of the graham cracker, do you?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So, and this was something I learned at a Weston A. Price conference years ago, was that there was a Presbyterian minister, Sylvester Graham, who believed that vegetarianism repressed sexual urges, and that's why he invented the graham cracker, which, now I'm not going to lie, it's good. I mean, a graham cracker, it's great to make some s'mores with some organic chocolate and true grass-fed marshmallows, but graham crackers, man. I think it needs a new name. We need to come up with a new name for the graham cracker.
Yeah, you could call them ginger crisps or cinnamon crisps.
That, or someone in the movement that maybe their last name should be put on instead of that Sylvester Graham.
There you go. Call them Fallon Crackers.
Yes. Love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, yes. They're delicious. The sourdough graham crackers are really yummy.
Yeah. There's lots of sourdough recipes in it, so certainly don't have the time to talk about all the ones. But one that I also want to bring up, because it was very near and dear to me, is your waffle one, as I love to celebrate these bizarre food holidays like Waffle Day. And I was looking in the supermarket. I knew I wasn't going to be able to find a sourdough one, but I thought, okay, I'll settle for just an organic one. And I know that those may not be perfect. They may have some of the things that we see in the conventional wheat. Well, the seed oils was the one thing that was a deal breaker to me. If it had enriched vitamins, okay, I'll settle for that, or added gluten. But no, seed oils was a deal breaker. And I could not find any organic frozen waffles in the supermarket that were seed oil free.
Yeah, and a frozen waffle's terrible anyway. Now, if you freeze it at home, I tell you what, there is a good thing about freezing your waffles at home, is it lowers the glycemic index. So that can help with your blood sugar stabilization. So if you make a bunch of waffles and freeze them, they have lower impact on your blood sugar when you heat them back up.
Yes, I've been hearing a lot about that recently, about freezing any wheat product, is it actually lowers the glycemic index.
And rice is too. Yeah. Any starchy food, you can freeze it and it'll lower the glycemic index when you heat it back up.
Which, that's great. Yes, because I live in a household of one, and some of these products that I buy, I can't eat all. So I end up freezing a lot. And when I heard that, I'm like, wow, so I'm actually making mine better by doing this.
Yeah, and that's the way to do it, especially as a single person, is to make that batch of whatever it is and freeze all your extras so you can just pull out one pancake. You don't have a whole batch of pancakes in the refrigerator. No one man needs a whole batch of pancakes in their refrigerator. It's not a good plan for your blood sugar.
Right. Yes. Like last night, I just had a frozen sourdough hamburger bun. I made burger with, so it's nice to know that, because that was frozen, that I was actually getting a lower glycemic index than originally.
Helps it out.
That's amazing. Yes, and you talked a little about what type of wheat to use. What type of wheat do you usually use for your product?
I just buy the Costco organic grain because I use a lot of it. I'm baking for farmers market type applications, so I have to buy in bulk. If I was going to just be baking for me, I would probably be home milling some grains, but I just don't have the capacity for how much I'm baking to mill it all myself.
And what you buy, is it a whole grain or is it white flour?
Yeah, it's a whole grain. It's from a wheat berry. It's Central Milling is a local.
I know
milling.
Central Milling, yes. Yeah, a lot of the sourdough bakers in LA use Central Milling.
Yeah, it's from them. So it's a good brand. Company, it's a good wheat. Yeah, I looked into it. And so I'm comfortable using that. Sometimes they run out of it and I'm always a little worried that they won't have it, but I do have wheat berries stashed and a grinder if I ever need it, but I just can't do it for my everyday bake. So you got to make do with what you can do. If you're baking just for your family and you can grind all that grain at home, But I do still recommend for new bakers to whole grain baking that you use at least a little bit of the store-bought flour, equal parts store-bought to home ground first, because there's a bit of a learning curve and your bread will be hard as a rock if you go all in on the whole wheat.
Yes, home grinding, that's certainly a big dedication. Something I also recommend to people if you're buying just the flours is there is a variety known as hard white, which is a naturally lighter colored wheat variety, and it's great as a substitution for if you're having trouble getting off of the white flour.
Yeah, and einkorn's fantastic, but it's expensive. So if you can get einkorn, if you can afford einkorn. I can't afford einkorn on an everyday basis, but other good ancient grains, emmer is great, spelt is really good, rye can be good. I really like spelt. I think spelt tastes super
Oh
good.
yeah, spelt is great because it is an ancient grain, but it's probably the most similar to modern wheat, I would say.
Yeah, it gives a nice nutty flavor, but still, I would say try to do no more than equal parts fresh ground to your store-bought just initially while you're getting the hang of that transition, because it is a transition. I definitely recommend learning on a store-bought flour first, just for getting a feel of how to make bread before you start messing around with the whole grain stuff, because it can be really tricky.
I agree. Yes, it's a lot of a learning curve, like you've said, home grind. So, yeah, certainly nothing wrong with taking a store-bought flour as long as you get the right things in it. No enriched vitamins added to it. It's organic.
For sure. Yeah, you're going to have a lot more nutrients using the whole grain flour. So it is really nice to add some of it in. But yeah, if all you have is store bought, your homemade fermented sourdough is going to be so much more nutrient dense just from the fermentation itself. That adds B vitamins. It unlocks all the nutrients in that flour by fermenting it. The microbes pre-digest it for you. So it makes it a lot more easy for your body to digest than anything you could possibly buy from the store.
Yes. And also with einkorn, in addition to being expensive, there's a big learning curve, I would say, with that, because a lot of times the issue with einkorn is getting it to rise.
And it's pretty heavy. If you don't have a strong enough sourdough starter, it's gonna have a hard time.
Yes, because I've certainly had my experience with trying to make something with einkorn and seeing how flat it was.
Yeah, it can definitely be a struggle, especially if you don't build the gluten structure enough. And einkorn has lower gluten just naturally.
Right, which
So
is the reason
adding,
it makes it harder to rise.
yeah, so adding a little of store-bought flour to an einkorn bread can help with that a lot. Or I think you can use a sifted einkorn for part of it, sift out some of the grain so it's more fine to give it more lift too.
Yes, so lots of great things you can do with sourdough, and it helps when you're having lots of cultures and you don't know what to do with it. And you have two other subsections just in the cooking section of Homestead to Homestead. So I want to cover some of the recipes in those. The first section that you have in there is the ferments, which fits very well for being a microbiome coach. So tell us about some of the ferments.
Oh, that's our bread and butter in the microbiome world. We're all about the ferments. You want to ferment that butter. You want to ferment that bread too, though. Everything's fermented when you're in the microbiome world. So the biggest one, the most important one, in my opinion, is milk kefir. Milk kefir is my number one favorite ferment of all time, but it has to be homemade milk kefir. The store-bought stuff is fake. It is not real kefir. Have you ever had kefir?
I have, yeah.
My friend was drinking the life away milk kefir from the
Oh,
store,
yeah.
and we left a bottle of that out on the counter for about 6 weeks and it never fermented. So it just sat there. It was the same as it was before. So that's not real kefir. The store-bought stuff is so easy. You can go grab it, but it's a yogurt drink. It's not kefir. The stuff you make at home, you're using a culture. It's similar to a SCOBY in kombucha. It's a symbiotic colony of bacterias and yeasts, and they look like little rubbery cauliflowers almost. It's the texture of a gummy bear. They're really chewy, they're tangy, they're completely edible, but you add those to your milk. And the cultures in the SCOBY or the grains, not actual grains, they're a SCOBY, they eat all of the lactose out of the milk and they take all of the nutrients in that milk and they unlock it and make it bioavailable. So it puts out K2, it has all your B vitamins, it has D, it has A, it has everything you could possibly want, has magnesium, potassium, calcium. It's literally protein. It has all of your nutrients. So that's what I drink for breakfast. in the morning. I drink a quart of it. I'm over the top. Not everybody wants to drink a quart of kefir, but I'm obsessed with this stuff. And I've been drinking a quart of kefir for breakfast every day for a year and a half, and I have not gotten sick a single time in that span. And I blame it on the kefir. The kefir has completely changed my gut. I'm regular on the toilet. I don't have allergies anymore. Mosquitoes actively avoid me now. They will come flying by, look at me, and run away. I have not been bit by a mosquito in a year and a half. I used to get eaten alive. If you didn't know, that's a sign that your B vitamins are low. They run away from me now. It has had such a crazy impact on my skin. I just feel like so much energy, so much better revitalized nature. So sometimes I drink a half gallon of kefir in a day because I replace it. Sometimes I don't feel like eating. And if I don't feel like eating, I will drink a quart of kefir. There's 40 grams of protein in there. It has so much deep nutrition that it literally fills me up. And I add this baobab powder to it. Have you ever heard of baobab?
I haven't.
This is a fruit out of Africa, and it is the Hadza tribe. That's one of their main food sources. Have you heard of the Hadza tribe?
No.
So the Hadza tribe is one of the few cultures that's still living on an ancestral diet. So they eat majority of cow and cow blood and this baobab. And they supposedly have one of the most diverse microbiomes on the planet. And a lot of that is credited to the vitamin C and the prebiotic fibers that are in that baobab fruit.
Oh. Wow, unbelievable. And I like how you bring up the K2 benefits of kefir. What would an interview with a wise tradition speaker be without bringing
Without a
up
K2.
K2? Activator X, as Dr. Weston Price called it.
It's good stuff. It's clearing up people's eczema. It's doing amazing things. It's reversing people's dairy intolerances, which now in my group, we've discovered that dairy intolerance just means you're lacking the enzymes to digest the dairy. And so if you drink the fermented milk kefir, those enzymes are in there. So you can build up your body's tolerance to dairy again and be able to be a full-on cheese eater if you are good about doing your kefir.
Dairy's another one, like wheat, of the causes of people not being able to digest dairy are very misunderstood, and certainly ferments. That's one thing that's lost in a lot of people with dairy. Also, pasteurization is another one that 90% of the people that are diagnosed with lactose intolerance are actually pasteurization intolerant.
Right. Yeah. Because you're losing all of those natural microbes and the ability, the enzymes in there, they're killed off by the heat.
Yeah. Also, what are your thoughts? Because a lot of people also say that it has a lot to do with the A1 breed of the cows, and a lot of people found they do better on A2 dairy.
I use A2 dairy predominantly, but I really only drink fermented dairy. So I find that fermenting any dairy makes it perfectly tolerable for me.
I imagine it would, as would I would say also importance of dairy that's organic, but even more important, dairy that's grass-fed.
That's ideal, but good luck. You're not going to find it everywhere. You got to make do with what you can get. You
That is
know, if
true,
you
yeah.
can get what you can get, the best that you can get, and ferment it, and it will unlock those nutrients and get rid of any bad stuff that's in there. They're finding that those microbes can actually help to eat out microplastics. They can help to clear out bad things that are in pesticides, those type of things in the milk as well.
I know I'm privileged in California where I do have access to a lot of grass-fed dairy. Where you are, how easy or difficult is it to find grass-fed?
It's a little tricky. If you want raw milk, it's even trickier. You have to get a share on a farm.
Right.
And we used to get it delivered locally and have to go pick it up. And I just drink way too much kefir for that to be sustainable. I go through a solid gallon of milk a day. So it's no joke. There's a lot of dairy consumed in my household. The people at the grocery store, when I go to Costco every 2 weeks, are like, wow, you're big milk drinkers at your house. Because I've got the entire bottom of the cart filled up with the A2 organic milk, is what I predominantly use from Costco for my kefir. And it is ultra pasteurized, which some people say is not great for the kefir grains, but this is what I have access to. And at least it's A2 and it does work with the kefir grains. So you really have to work with your budget and what you can do, the best you can do. Not everybody can afford to have raw milk. If I could have a cow, I would have a cow, but I live in the city.
Budget is an important issue to address because, yes, and also a lot of the milk, which is, say, regenerative, 100% grass-fed, A2, that can get more expensive.
It's no joke, and it's hard to find really good quality stuff. Even the stuff that says it's grass-fed anymore, I keep seeing things that it's not actually grass-fed. They're just labeling things arbitrarily, and it's not true. A lot of the grass-fed meat and stuff. So unless you're getting it and sourcing it straight from a farm, it is highly unlikely that you're getting real grass-fed and you're just paying for that sticker.
There's many different levels of grass-fed because cows, unlike, say, chicken or pigs, all cows do start out somewhat on the grass. So I have seen, yes, some try to say that's grass-fed. And then you get to 100% grass-fed, which there's more truth in it. Now, there are some caveats because I know that 100% grass-fed can include feeding some hay to the cows. So we could go down the whole rabbit hole. I guess if money is less of an issue and you're trying to decide what's best with the label, I like to find ones that say regenerative and work with some of these regenerative certifying programs, because then even if maybe they sometimes substitute stuff for the grass, ultimately, it's doing the best job of grazing with the regenerative certification.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. If that was a thing where I was at, I would definitely look for that. But I have not seen anything say regenerative here in Colorado.
It's not a thing everywhere. I am seeing some companies do it. And yeah, I live in California. So again, maybe I'm a little in my bubble.
Right.
But the thing is, I have seen from going to these conferences that supermarkets across the country are finally starting to have more of an interest in the regenerative. So it's all a changing thing. I am actually surprised that it's caught on this fast.
Yeah,
so,
I'll keep an eye out.
It would be interesting to hear your experience, say, 5 years from now, if you can find more of this. But yeah, I could see it coming to Costco in, say, 5 to 10 years, because certainly with Costco now, organic has become a big thing. I've actually heard that they provide the largest amount of organics of any supermarkets. So yeah, things are changing and they're getting better. So yes, we've covered the ferments and the sourdough, and the third subsection in your book, which is something which is near and dear to me, is condiments. I love all kinds of condiments. So tell us about some of those you have.
Oh my gosh. Well, pâté, I don't know if it's under the condiments, but that is one
of my
favorite condiments.
It is, yes, which I like that. And yeah, I saw that and I was looking, I said, well, yeah, a pâté, that is essentially a condiment.
It is. It's fantastic. Have you ever had pâté on toast with jelly?
I have not had that, but that sounds great.
Oh, it's so good. I'm putting you onto that. You're going to have to go make that pâté recipe.
I'll do that.
And then make my bread recipe, and then you can have that. Are you up for it, Aaron? You going to try to make some stuff out of my book?
I'll try to. Yeah. Now, I have to say, baking is a little of my weak spot that I've dabbled with a little, dabbled somewhat with during the pandemic. But certainly, yeah, ferments and condiments. I love making those.
Call
and I've tried pâté recipes. Certainly, I had another guest which gave a great pâté recipe and love it. So I'm certainly excited to try some of your recipes in it because, you have so many of my favorite things. What are some of the other condiments that you have?
Ooh, fermented mustard is so good.
Yes, I love mustard.
So yummy. So you just ferment mustard seeds in water like you're doing a sauerkraut type of situation. And I ferment them for 2 weeks with a 3% salt brine. And you grind that up with whatever flavors you want. You could do salt. You could do honey mustard. Oh my gosh, the fermented honey mustard is out of control. I don't think I have that recipe in there. I'll have to write it down and send it to you. It was so delicious. But it's super easy. Mustard is so easy to make. And you can add turmeric. And it has that natural vinegar. You created it through the fermentation and lactic acid. So it's very bioavailable, gut friendly, and delicious. It adds so much umami and tartness. Oh, so good.
How about a fermented spicy mustard? Because that's my favorite variety of mustard.
Oh, yeah. You can absolutely throw chili peppers in there when you're fermenting the mustard and ferment them together. When I do fermentation, I use a weight process. So I weigh all of the ingredients and do a percentage of the weight of those ingredients together to make sure that I have the right percentage of my brine so that you can add whatever you want to it. You could put peppers in there. You could put onions in there. You could put garlic in there. Go nuts. Creativity is so much easier when you have a hard and fast rule of you just weigh it and you know what the percent is and you can do it anything you want.
And I know you also have a fermented ketchup recipe because I like both mustard and ketchup on my burgers and my hot dogs. I will put both of them on it, which I know is frowned upon by some people.
Sure. Oh, I like both.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, especially with hot dogs. There's such an anti-ketchup on hot dogs thing, and I don't get it. I think the balance of the mustard and the ketchup is such a great thing. A bit of a yin and yang, a spicy and sweet.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a really good combo. Honestly, I really like relish on a hot dog too. And you can make fermented relish using cucumbers. I don't have a recipe in there for it, but I should put one in there.
Interesting.
For the next iteration.
So do you chop the cucumber up and ferment it? Because for me, I love making fermented pickles, my own real pickles. I'm doing that lots now since this is pickle season because I can't find access to the pickling cucumbers all time of year. But when it's in the summer from May through October, November, loosely, sometimes it ends or starts a little later. I make lots of pickles. And what I've done for relish is, and maybe it's because I'm not really big on the sweet relish, I prefer the dill relish. I've just chopped up my fermented pickles into relish is what I've done.
Yeah, you can definitely do it that way. That is an easy way to do it, for sure. And then you won't have to worry so much about it getting a little mushy. Sometimes it'll get mushy if you do it in a chopped up
preparation.
Fast ferment.
Yeah, which it's I guess mushy is less of a concern if you make them as the relish. Honestly, I'm not the biggest fan of pickle relish. I don't know. I love pickles so much. It's such a beautiful thing that something about relish looks to me like the mafia came and mutilated and chopped it up into little pieces. But I do have it for friends when they come over if they want to put it on their hot dogs. Also, I will say the time I like to use it is when I make my own special sauce. It goes well in there.
Oh, yeah, that's the time. Yeah.
So, okay, I'm guilty somewhat of even using this relish, even though I think it's abuse.
It just depends on what you're doing with it. And it is nice to have it in the big pickle form if that's how you normally eat it. And then you can cut it if you need to. That's a good way to do it for sure.
Right. Because I have heard that you can also use any type of cucumber if you're doing it, just the relish as well as just the chips. That's what I've heard from Austin Durant, who wrote the Fearless Fermentation book.
Yeah, there's definitely textural issues. If you want to do a pickle slice, you want to make sure you get a pickle that's really small. The lower the water content in the pickle, the better the crunch will stay. If it's a really watery cucumber, it will hollow out and the middle will turn into mush.
Yeah, and I've generally found for my pickling cucumbers, when I go to the farmer's market and buy it, I always search around for what are the smallest cucumbers there. They make the better pickles. That's a hack I've learned.
For sure, especially with fermentation. Those microbes love to gobble up the really watery bits.
Right. Yeah. So that works so much better. And of course, thank goodness for bay leaves. Those help immensely.
Yeah.
I one time left bay leaves out and I saw the difference.
Big time. Yeah. Adding the tannins helps a lot. And you can do other things. You can do grape leaves. You could do oak leaves. Mm-hmm. You could do teas like black tea or Earl Grey tea makes a really interesting flavor in a pickle. And you could pickle all sorts of stuff using fermentation. We do carrots a lot. That's a big favorite.
Oh, yeah. Oh, pickled carrots are great. Yeah.
They're super yummy. And then onions are huge. That's always a big hit. And then I have a recipe called firekraut, where it's all the ingredients in fire cider. Have you ever heard of fire cider?
I haven't. You're teaching me a lot of new stuff. This is great.
You need to go dig into my course.
Oh, I'll
I gave
be doing
him
a
access
deep dive.
To my
course.
There's so many fun things in there. He's going to have a ball. So fire cider is a oxymel, and it's an infusion into apple cider vinegar. And so generally you'll put in radishes of some form. So the hotter the radish, the more potent the medicine. So horseradish, if you can find it, but any radish helps with clearing indigestion and sinuses and mucus. And then we do onions, garlic, spicy peppers, turmeric, ginger, peppercorns, any herbs you want to put in there. You could put rosemary, sage, whatever you have. And then you cover that up with your apple cider vinegar and you let it infuse into the apple cider vinegar for anywhere between 4 to 8 weeks. And then you strain all that stuff out of it and you mix it with honey. And so this is a potent medicine for cold and flu season. It helps with anytime you're sick, it'll clear out your sinuses, and it has lots of really good properties, antimicrobial properties. The apple cider vinegar helps with digestion. It has lots of beneficial microbes in it because it's made with the mother. So this is ancestral medicine. I took all those ingredients and I put them into sauerkraut. And so it's all of that on microbial crack. It's loaded up the best possible thing for cold and flu season. This firekraut, it is packed.
Oh,
So
that
anytime
sounds
you
wonderful.
start getting a sniffle or something, the first thing we go to is sauerkraut because it is one of the best sources of vitamin C on the planet. Did you know that microbes multiply nutrients?
Microbes multiply nutrients. It makes perfect sense.
So when you take a cabbage, if you take 1 cup of cabbage, it'll have 70 micrograms of vitamin C, right? When you ferment that cabbage, 1 cup of fermented cabbage has 700, 10 times the amount of the vitamin C in whatever vegetable you ferment. They are going in, consuming it for you, breaking it down and releasing all of the nutrients and making them more bioavailable and increasing their potency. It's the craziest thing. They're little Pac-Mans going in there and digesting it for you.
Oh, I love that reference
So
as a child of
cool.
the 80s and who loves those classic Atari games. The Pac-Man
Out,
thing hits very well. Nom, 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 nom.
Yeah.
Power pellets.
Yes, they are. And then you go and eat them, and you're getting all of that unlocked power from those microbes. It's amazing. It's such a crazy process, and it makes everything so much more nutrient dense for us. It's the wildest thing.
Yes. And obviously, we could talk about so many different recipes in there, but we don't want to do that because we want people to read the book. So let's not cover all of that. But
For
I do
sure.
want to cover one more food recipe, which is you talked about fermented butter.
Oh, yes. So we do that using milk kefir. So what you do with that is you buy heavy cream. So if you get it from the farm or whatever, you can get heavy cream from them. Whoever you get it from, get a jug of heavy cream and you'll do a second ferment using kefir. So I take out some of my kefir from my batch, so a cup of kefir, and then I will add 3 cups of the heavy cream to that kefir, shake it up and leave it on the counter until it splits. So that's usually about 24 hours. When it splits, it just removed all of the whey from it and turned itself into butter. So literally all you have to do, keep that whey, drink that. That's super good. Squeeze out the buttermilk from that butter and you have cultured butter. If you want to, you can put it in a KitchenAid mixer and whip it up a little bit and it'll make it into a really whippy cultured butter and you can add salt to it, but it is actual magic.
Yes. So, in addition to the recipes for food that you have in your book, I know you also have other recipes in natural cleaning and skincare. So, let's hear about a few of those.
For sure. My gateway into making all of the things was after I had my son. I was given a teeny tiny jar of this nipple butter, which people give you things when you have a baby and you're like, oh, this is so sweet. And you use it up and then you go to try to replace it and it was $30. And I was like, what is in this? Is it made out of gold? So I went and I looked up all the ingredients and I was like, oh, that's a flower. Oh, that's a root. Oh, that's just oil. I can make this. This is stupid. Why am I buying this? So I created my very first thing, this nipple butter. I infused calendula and marshmallow root into avocado oil, and I bought the stuff on Amazon and I just did the thing and I made a big batch and I gave it away to all my friends and everyone fell in love with it. So that is in my book. All of my recipes are in my book because I want people to have access to being able to make their own safe products. There's just no reason for us to go spend $30 on a 1 ounce jar of nipple butter when you can buy all of the ingredients to make 40 ounces of nipple butter for less than $30 on Amazon.
Nice. And in addition to your book, Homestead to Homestead, and your targeted microbial therapy courses, I know you also have TMT nutrition and meal plans. So Let's hear a little about those.
Every time I have a client, the biggest question we get is, what do I eat? I don't know what to eat. I don't know what's safe. I don't know what I can eat. So all of those recipes that I share with all my one-on-one clients, everyone I've ever helped, I just put all of their little meal plans together and they all get put in there. So there's all different stuff. There's vegetarian in there, which I don't promote vegetarianism. That vegetarian client, I was like, you need to eat dairy. Because she was very malnutrition when she started working with me. And a lot of people who work with me, that's what we're trying to do, is get them to start feeding their body and nourishing their bodies properly. So there's lots of meal planning, like bigger prepping meals. So you can make 2 chickens at once and take all the meat off, and it explains to you how you can use that for the whole week. So making nutrition practical, making nutrition make sense. It's just another free resource that I offer to the folks that join us in my community and do my course.
And can you see yourself offering additional courses or writing another book?
I currently have this membership, and during this membership, every single class is recorded. So it is a growing and morphing course in the making. So every single thing I do in this membership will be in a ginormous course at some point. And every member has access to it at any time. So if somebody wants to join the TMT tribe, they can go back and watch every class we've ever done. And my courses that I do for my one-on-one and my group coaching, those are all in there. So they can deep dive as deep as they want. And then every month we do new things and they can learn how to do all the things with us.
And in addition to your courses and your book, I know for people that live locally in your area, you have Hargrove's General Goods where people can buy some of your products. So tell us a little about
that. Yeah. When I started making all the things, obviously I gift them to my friends and family, and then they start demanding that I sell them to them. So through that process, I started making things in bulk. And I have made a friend on the internet, and she has her own farmer's market. And she was like, I need vendors. And I was like, I make things. So we met in the middle, and I've started doing her farmer's market all summer. So I do farmer's markets on Wednesday nights all summer long and offer deodorants and tallow sticks and calendula sticks and clean skincare products and organic, long fermented sourdough baked goods for that community. And that way, I feel like I can share with them and support them. And then for the people who can't make it and can't come to see me in person, they can get my book and make it themselves.
Wonderful. And obviously, with your book and all the recipes, you love to cook. So what is your favorite dish that you don't have included in the book?
Oh, I think probably the sardine nuggets. Those are delicious. That's probably our favorite easy thing to make that's a crowd pleaser for kids. And it's just canned sardines and an egg and some binder and salt, garlic, paprika, whatever seasoning. A little dill is yummy. And we fry them in a pan with whatever fat you have. So you could do tallow or ghee. And I just do spoon-sized dollops onto the pan. So they're the size of a chicken nugget. And you just cook it on both sides. And they're so delicious, dipped in your special sauce made with your homemade mayonnaise, your fermented ketchup, your fermented mustard, and your fermented pickles, right? Oh, super yummy.
All right. We're just about out of time, but before we go, let the listeners know where they can turn to learn more about your book and your courses online and on social media.
I have a big presence on Instagram. I teach fermenting and all the lifestyle, circadian rhythm, all those sorts of fun things on my Instagram page. It's at Holistic Hargroves. And I have a free circadian rhythm masterclass coming up. You can register and watch it live on my website, hargrovegeneralgoods.com. And on there, you can see what classes I have available. So the circadian rhythm course, I'll leave it up there so people can register and watch the replay if they want. But that'll be really fun.
Yes. And then before we know it, we have the Wise Traditions Conference in Salt Lake City.
So soon.
I can't wait to meet you in person there, because this interview's been a lot of fun. But it'll be great seeing you in person.
Yes.
And I look forward to your talks. Thank you so much for coming on this program.
Definitely. It was really nice talking to you, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Me too. Great talking to you. That's all for this episode of The Appropriate Omnivore. New episodes of the show released every Wednesday. Follow me on social media for more information on the next episode. And to make sure you never miss any of my podcasts, subscribe to The Appropriate Omnivore on your favorite podcast site or app. You can also listen to all my podcasts on my website, appropriateomnivore.com. There you can find recipes from the guests I interview, plus all of my articles covering lifestyles in the world of real food. Until next time, my pantry is officially closed.